It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of
alley cats from all over America to chip in $5 each to keep Arizona clean. We need to spread clean elections, not kill them, and Arizona is the place for all democracy fighters to take a stand. This is Jim Hightower saying, Abe Lincoln, who said we should have a government of, by, and for the people, is pictured on a $5 bill. To support that ideal, send your own Abe to Arizona. To donate $5, call 602-364-3477.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system, or satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, with archives at White Rose Society and at TomHartman.com. You can get the, TomHartman.com will get you there, the chat room there, if you'd like to call our program today, our number 1-866-889-8894. And just to start out, this is the Jim Jordan, the Americans Coming Together, posted the Bush lie of the day yesterday. And aside from the, kind of gotcha partisan nature of all this stuff, this is really an issue. I mean, this is a serious problem for those of us who live in the United States, who love this country, and who would like to have some feeling of safety and security, and to think that our government might be putting our interests above the interests of the chemical industry or the railroad industry. George Bush, 2 years ago yesterday, April 17th, 2002, in his presidential radio address, 2 years ago yesterday was a Saturday, said, and I quote, my budget would nearly double funding for Homeland Security to almost $38 billion. Now, keep in mind, this is after 9/11. My budget would nearly double funding for Homeland Security to almost $38 billion. Money to train and equip firefighters, police officers, and emergency medical personnel. Money for the Coast Guard to protect our ports and coasts. Money to keep our water treatment plants and nuclear facilities safe. End of quote. And everybody's going, yep, it sounds great. There's a long pattern of this with the Bush administration in general and George Bush in particular of saying, yes, we are going to, for example, we're going to provide for educational excellence. We're going to pass this law that requires school districts all across the nation to buy tests, which are made up of a dozen or more sheets of printed paper, for $30 to $40 a piece from big multi $400-500 million testing corporations that became $1 billion testing corporations when the No Child Left Behind Act was passed. We talked about this before on this program. Jim Jeffords left the Republican Party over this. I met with his staff when this thing was being deliberated, and they were just going nuts. They were like, this is nothing more than a payoff to the testing companies who are politically active. In other words, they give money to the Republicans. So Bush says to local school districts all across the country, you've got to give money, you've got to buy these tests from these testing companies and administer them. And we will make sure that you've got the money to do that. And, you know, in other words, it was supposed to be a transfer from your and my tax dollars to the testing corporations that were making contributions to the Republicans. And this was the point at which, you know, Teddy Kennedy and the Democrats, I mean, this was originally Kennedy's bill, keep in mind. This is the point at which they bailed out. Because it was originally it was, you know, let's just identify areas that need help and get more help to them. And the Republicans turned it into a corporate welfare program or a mandate for the testing corporations and all the other corporations that are around the edges of education, and really a setup for the failure of the public school system, which would benefit an even larger industry of private schools. And given the fact that 73% of private schools in the United States are religious schools, would energize the base, as they say. And in reality, what happened is they passed the law, it had the mandates, and then they underfunded it by billions of dollars. So you've got school districts all across the country that are absolutely freaking out, struggling. Here in Vermont, we're talking about actually pulling out of the program and saying, we won't take any federal money, we're just going to can this whole thing. Well, here you got Bush saying he's going to protect our ports and coasts. He's going to protect our water treatment plants and nuclear facilities. He's going to pay for more firefighters, police officers, and EMTs. Money for the Coast Guard. Well, here's the reality. Keep in mind, that promise was made 2 years ago that we would be a safer nation as a result of the efforts of the Bush administration. 2 years ago, that promise was made. Here's the reality. Our ports and coasts are still unprotected, and the Coast Guard is stretched to the limit, yet the Bush administration still underfunds both. As the Miami Herald noted earlier this year, quote, variations of waterfront security problems in the terrorist age are repeated in the nation's 360 ports, which are scrambling to install security perimeters and cargo screening for the 6 million containers shipped here by freight each year. Yet the Bush administration has asked for only $42 million in the 2005 budget to fund security grants to be doled out to ports. The American Association of Port Authorities estimates the ports need at least $400 million. An attempt to charge shippers a user fee to pay for these security upgrades was stripped out of federal legislation earlier this month. So first of all, they say, oh, yeah, don't worry, we're going to protect the ports. And then they say, okay, what's it going to cost? Well, the people who are running the ports say it's going to cost $400 million. And they say, well, okay, then you pay for it. And they put that provision into the law. Well, of course, the lobbyists for the shipping companies got into the act and said, no, we're not going to pay for it. And so the Bush administration took it out because what lobbyists want, lobbyists get with the Bush administration, which left us with no protection. No protection. And we're talking about an amount of money equal to what we spend in 5 days in Iraq. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to call the program, Dave in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great.
Yesterday, you made a couple... Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yesterday, you made a couple remarks that got my blood boiling, and one of the things, as I keep hearing, that liberals are very tolerant of diverse opinions. Well, you threw a couple of slanderous remarks around Bush being AWOL, and number one, there's never been anything to refute that Bush has ever at any time was missing from the guard duty. Anybody that could say with 100%
David,
surety,
hang on just a second here, David. You can't prove a negative. In other words, for example, you can't prove that I wasn't looking at that wall, you know, 10 minutes ago. Okay,
but
you can prove a positive. And George Bush cannot produce one human being, even though there was a $10,000 reward offered for 2 years. He cannot produce one human being during that 5 month period who saw him down there. He can produce two people who were in the political campaign that he was supposed to be helping, who said that he showed up in the campaign twice during that five-month period. And this is why a lot of people are suspecting that maybe he was actually in rehab during that time.
Okay, and that's something else, the rehab. You mentioned the cocaine issue.
Yes.
You mentioned his use of cocaine.
I'll
donate $5,000 to the charity of your choice if you can get sworn deposition, irrefutable proof that he ever once did cocaine. And furthermore, Tom, the only president with a direct cocaine linkage is Bill Clinton. Roger Clinton is caught on an FBI, I believe it's an FBI sting tape, purchasing cocaine. And on the tape, he says, I'm getting it for my brother who has a nose like a Hoover. And as far as I know, Roger Clinton only has one brother. So if you want to make a slanderous remark about Bush and cocaine, make sure you first back up Billy Bob. It's because he's the only one. Jennifer Flowers even is on record saying how Bill offered her cocaine on a regular basis.
Here's where it came. Bill Clinton's not running for president, David. Here's where it came from, David.
He did, and there was a big pass on that.
Here's where it came from. Mark Hatfield wrote a biography of George W. Bush called Fortunate Son. And he interviewed three different people who showed him evidence and testified and gave him depositions that George W. Bush had been arrested for cocaine in Texas when he was in his 20s. Now, George W. Bush worked for 30 days. 30 days. This is, you know, this incredible rich kid who, you know, just like took time out of his life and spent and worked 30 days in an inner city a shelter. And, you know, in his biography, well, I thought I would help out. Turns out that was court-ordered, that for 30 days in exchange for his cocaine arrest, he had to serve 30 days of community service. Now, Mark Hatfield has the evidence. It's in his book, Fortunate Son. He's got the names. He's got the people. And a month and a half after that book was published, he was found dead in his hotel room. Very strange.
He was found dead
in his hotel room. Mark Hatfield, the guy who wrote the book, Fortunate Son, who documented George Bush's cocaine arrest and the community service. And then right after that, George Bush's driver's license got reissued. Bush was governor of Texas when this happened. Right after that book came out, Bush's driver's license got reissued, and the state of Texas said, oh, we have somehow lost all police records of George Bush, all driving records of George Bush. He didn't exist before this date, right now. This was like 98. And that's a matter of record. Why did George Bush and then when the press asked him, Mr. Bush, have you ever taken cocaine? His answer was, I have not taken any drugs since 1974.
He also said that he had been sober, but even then, any drug. If you're the party of tolerance, why would he not be given a pass when Clinton, and by the way, when you referred to him as AWOL, there is a guy that actively denounced the U.S. government from Red Square in Moscow. While he was in school in England, he took a trip to Russia and denounced the U.S. government from Red Square.
David, I got to remind you again. You're fighting a battle that's 8 years old. Bill Clinton is not running for president.
But you guys gave him a pass when he did.
I never gave Bill Clinton a pass. I'm sitting here talking about George W. Bush and John Kerry and Ralph Nader.
Right, that's my point. You guys are ripping him to no end.
You guys.
Even if everything he did was wrong. I mean, even if everything you're blaming him of was...
David, you will find that I am one of Bill Clinton's greatest critics. I think Bill Clinton sold this country down the tubes. When he signed NAFTA and GATT, he destroyed the economic future of my children and grandchildren. When he signed the Telecommunications Act in 1996, he ruined the freedom of the press in the United States. I have a lot of problems with Bill Clinton. His idea of the new Democrats and the Democratic Leadership Council creating Republican light, he undid half of the New Deal. I mean, Bill Clinton, I have a lot of problems with, and I'm saying here, George W. Bush, as far as I can tell from what I've read, was arrested for cocaine when he was young, did serve community service. There is a record of it. And mysteriously, the Bush administration is saying, gee, we can't find any of those records, just like they can't find the records of his service when he was in Alabama and for the Texas Air National Guard. It stinks. That's what I'm saying, David. Got to move along. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in New Mexico, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm a little appalled by what I just heard. I did my 6 years, including...
Chuck, I got to ask you to hold on. I'm sorry. I wasn't watching the clock there and got into it with David. Just hang on. Hang on over the break, and we'll pick this up on the other side. It's just going to be a couple of minutes. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. The pill that will help you escape the matrix. Stick around. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, by the way.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. In my new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, I examine how Thomas Jefferson's democratic vision for our nation has been under constant attack by conservatives who see political power as a tool to manipulate laws for their personal financial gain. Among the truths you'll learn by reading this book are how Jefferson warned that the merging of big business with state interests could be the greatest threat to democracy. Today we find that these fascist ideals have been prevalent in virtually all of George Bush's political and judicial appointments and legislation, the same as Hitler did when he overthrew the German democracy in 1933. You'll also learn how new scientific studies show that Jefferson was right when he cited in the Declaration of Independence that democracy was consistent with the laws of nature. Turns out that the natural state of all animals is democracy, and alpha animals only rarely act as leaders. What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy by me, Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. Welcome to our newest affiliate, WGAT, AM 1050 in Johnson, Tennessee, and beaming into Virginia. Welcome to our new listeners. Tom Hartman here with you. 25 minutes past the hour. And let's see, we were talking with Chuck in New Mexico, and we got a couple other callers here on the line. Chuck, and I've got just a few minutes, and then we've got at the bottom of the hour a guest. So let's move through this quickly. What's up?
Well, actually, I was just a little appalled by what I just heard with your previous caller before the break. And it just really, really got to me because, you know, to me, the President of the United States, as you pointed out, is not only the head of government, he's the head of state. And he sits there and tries to cloak himself in this religious business. Well, I've got a religious quote for him. It's out of Thessalonians, and it says that Caesar's wife must avoid even the appearance of impropriety. And here is this guy who's sending people off to die in military adventurism, and whether he did or did not serve out his time is in question. And
well, but he's avoiding the appearance of impropriety by hiding all the records.
Well, so, yeah, there you go.
That's how they're doing it.
Carl Rove is doing that.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think that Mr. Bush has got the brains to figure it out. But
don't underestimate him, Chuck. Don't underestimate him. Chuck, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. Good point. Kodak in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, is on the line. Hey, Kodak, what's up?
Well, naturally, that caller just upset me there. I can't understand why they try to just pick these one or few isolated points to pick on. Why don't they get in an uproar about some really serious issues that are affecting, you know, our quality of life? Yeah. I mean, there are so many scandals in this administration and lies. It's so numerous to pick from. Why don't they get on a crusade about, let's see.
Jobs, health care, the economy falling apart, the housing bubble that could destroy the middle class. By the way, the author is J.H. Hatfield, not Mark Hatfield. Mark Hatfield's the old senator from, I think, Oregon or whatever, but J.H. Hatfield was the author. I had that wrong. But as you were saying, Kodak.
Yeah, how about the changing of the suppression of the evidence regarding the EPA's findings on the air quality that was changed by this administration?
You mean at Ground Zero or in general?
At Ground Zero, yes. At Ground Zero.
Yeah. Well, also they're messing with the information statistics about the air quality for the whole nation. You know, changing the mercury standards, changing arsenic in the water standards.
Another one, suppressing the information regarding the charter schools.
Yeah.
To find out that there are the new charter schools, and some of them have been around for, over 17 years, the average of over 10. Yes, there are some that are 3 to 4 years in operation, but their scores are 6 months behind the public schools.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, I've done a lot of in-service trainings in charter schools back in the days when I was doing a lot of training of teachers. And we all had high hopes for the charter school movement back 10 years ago. There was a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of excitement. But what's been happening since they've been allowed to be opened by for-profit corporations is exactly what you're describing. It's, you know, how can we squeeze a buck out of this thing? And, you know, when you've got priorities other than education, that's what you get is a problem.
And here's another thing. Why aren't they screaming about the $1 trillion the Pentagon lost last year?
Yeah, well, it wasn't just last year. Yeah,
and the rocket launchers.
Yeah, it's $1 trillion over several years. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Kodak.
Right.
This is an absolute mess. Kodak, I got to move along. Got one more call here, and then got a guest. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you, Jeremy, in State College, Pennsylvania. You are live and on the air. What's up, Jeremy?
Hi, Tom. I'm a first-time caller. I listen to you a lot. I love your show.
Thank you.
There's something I wanted to bring up that I think a lot of Naderites need to know, and this is something that I'm not a campaign finance expert, but if you're familiar with the website Project Vote Smart.
I'm not.
It's a nonpartisan group that collects voting records, campaign finance data, and a bunch of nonpartisan stuff just for you to look at.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
Well, under John Kerry's PAC contributions, there's a big, bold disclaimer that says, by a matter of policy, this candidate will not accept any money from PACs.
Right.
Now, I know he probably gets money from corporations through the DLC or whatever, but the fact that he would take the stand, at least so much to say as...
Oh, he's been taking that stand for a decade. You know,
right.
John Kerry has. But he does take money from lobbyists, which is sort of, you know, balances it out, I suppose. But yeah, he has taken a principled stand, and I think he deserves to be applauded for it. Jeremy, I got to move along. Thanks for the call and making a good point. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
How do charter schools, promoted in the President's No Child Left Behind Act, stack up against public schools? Not so well. Data compiled by the American Federation of Teachers shows that fourth graders at charter schools lag 6 months behind students in public schools in reading and math. In addition, there are major discrepancies when it comes to race, with children of varying ethnic backgrounds performing worse in charter schools than their counterparts in urban public schools. In the past, charter schools had been championed as an alternative to poorly performing public schools. The No Child Left Behind Act mandates that public schools that chronically perform poorly are to be restructured as charter schools.
Recently, all charges were dropped against Francisco Herrera, a student intern with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee who was arrested in June for visiting farm workers in the fields. Herrera spent the summer visiting migrants in North Carolina to let them know about U.S. labor laws and protections like the right to earn a minimum wage and receive a pay stub.
They work about 12 hours, sometimes 14 hours a day, bending over, picking cucumbers, doing like 100 buckets a day.
The workers at the farm where he was arrested were being paid $3 an hour.
And we told the workers that what's going to happen, like the grower would come and he's going to be furious. But you guys stand your ground and defend your rights. So the grower came irate. He started screaming at my coworker. It's like, get off my private property, getting to see that this is private property and all this stuff.
Herrera said he will continue helping farm workers next summer with the Flock Student Action with Farm Workers program.
Contract negotiations are preventing work crews from Alabama Power from assisting in the Florida cleanup in the aftermath of Hurricane Charley. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have voted to give the power company 48 hours notice if a breakdown in negotiations lead to a strike. A representative of the company said it would be unfair to Floridians if they sent workers that may be affected by a work stoppage.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Feeling that you need to tighten your financial belt? According to the IRS, Americans reported less gross income on their tax returns for the second year in a row. This is the first back-to-back decline in more than a half century. Total income reported in 2002 fell by 2.3% to a little more than $6 trillion. And so far this year, wages aren't set to change the trend.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Hello, Mom. It's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying. Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan. I'm eating good and I'm praying.
Yeah, right. The Osama song. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on Sirius, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, and Michelle Goldberg, a senior writer for Salon Magazine, a fine online publication to which I have a premium membership. It's well worth the cost of admission. Is on the line. Before I get to Michelle, though, I just want to let you know, those folks who are trying to get into our chat room, we have our chat room, which for the couple of years that we've been doing this program, we've been using the Democratic Forum on CompuServe chat room software, and they're changing the software today. So go to tomhartman.com, click the chat link. That'll take you, first of all, to the new forum software. And then you either click on My Stuff or click on Post a Message, and that'll cause the forum to recognize you. And then click on the Tom Hartman program. It'll drop you into the chat room. And if you don't do it in that order, there'll be a problem. There's some sysops there to help you out. Sorry for the inconvenience. Anyhow, and our number 1-866-889-8894 if you want to comment on this, if you have questions for Michelle Goldberg. Michelle has written a very provocative, thought-provoking piece for Salon about the protest or the potential for protest. I think it goes way beyond potential. I think it's a virtual certainty for the Republican convention that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm very pleased that you could be here with us today. You suggest that if there is a high level of protest in New York City, and particularly if that protest gets out of hand, and it was something which many who were in Chicago in 68 suggest was actually provoked by the police, not by the demonstrators. There are others, you know, who were in Seattle, for example, who say, well, there were some protesters who were actually, you know, came in intent on committing vandalism. We don't know if there are going to be people who are going to try and commit vandalism, or whether there are going to be people who, you know, or whether the police might be set on provoking people, like, for example, in Italy. But if either one of those scenarios plays out, that the backlash actually might be beneficial to Bush, and use the 68 Democratic Convention as the analogy, suggesting that the backlash from the 68 convention hurt the Democrats. This is a Republican convention. Wouldn't the backlash hurt the Republicans?
I think, and most of the people I know who are the kind of senior activists or veteran activists who saw the fallout of 68 firsthand, it wasn't necessarily just that Humphrey was hurt because there was disorder on his doorstep, as much as Republicans kind of always and traditionally are the law and order candidates. They like to play themselves off against the screaming crazy lunatics on the left. And so I think it's really unlikely that this will somehow boost John Kerry by showing that, you know, George Bush brings chaos wherever he goes. To me, as one, you know, one older activist said to me, you know, George Bush would much rather run against some, you know, screaming anarchist than run against John Kerry.
Right.
And they could give him the opportunity to do that.
So, in other words, no matter how it plays out, any kind of testy activity on the part of the protesters, anything other than you know, the Million Mom March kind of very, you know, methodical, careful, middle class sort of march will be spun by the Republicans as, see, we told you so. These liberals are out of contact with reality. They're out of touch. They can't control their own behavior. They're all crazy. That's going to be the faux news line, right?
Well, that'll be, I mean, you know, almost no matter what, everybody could come out in business suits, and that would still be the Republican line.
Yeah.
I guess the question is whether that line is reinforced by what people see on their nightly news broadcasts.
Yeah, and of course,
I actually don't think it's any kind of protest that we're talking about. Any, you know, a kind of widespread nonviolent civil disobedience in which it was very clear that it wasn't the protesters who were provoking the police, and, you know, in which protesters behaved in a kind of dignified way and made it clear that they weren't here to cause trouble. I think that could be, you know, effective.
Yeah.
The problem is that there is right now, the problem for people who fear a Chicago 68 scenario is that right now there are a lot of, you know, anarchists. I spent a lot of time with them. I wrote a profile on them for Salon last week, who, although they are not endorsing violence, they're very specifically refusing to condemn violence, refusing to kind of denounce anyone's tactics, and have very different definitions of violence. They will all insist that property destruction isn't violence. I think that's an arguable point, but it's not a point that the police are likely to be sympathetic to. And so it seems pretty obvious to me that if you start smashing up windows, or if you start defacing, you know, the offices of someone that you've designated as a war profiteer, it's the point isn't that that somehow justifies a kind of violent police response, but I think that makes a violent police response pretty inevitable.
Yeah, which then escalates the violence, and then boom. And not only that, we've got a media now that's so fixated on infotainment, on getting the juicy video piece that is going to draw the most viewers, that will thus raise the advertising rates and make the most money for the corporation, the multinational that owns the news.
If you have 250,000 people marching peacefully in one part of the city and 50 people, you know, building a barricade and setting trash cans on fire in another, we can be pretty sure of what's going to make it onto the news.
Right, which is a real tragedy. Why, if there are anarchists out there or others, I mean, just you know, wackos, whatever you want to call them, if there are folks out there who, you know, because I think I understand kind of the anarchist worldview, and it's sort of a pseudo-libertarian worldview, in fact, in some ways, and I don't have much favor for the libertarians either, frankly, but you know, because ultimately neither one of them really believe in a civil society, but that's a whole different argument for another time, I suppose. But if there are folks who are strongly of the opinion that just bring the whole thing down, it's an evil machine, bring it down, do whatever you can to bring it down, and if that's their worldview, and I've certainly met people like that throughout my life, and I met a lot of them back in the 60s when my wife and I were very involved in both the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement, and were on the receiving end of everything from police surveillance to being dragged off. If those people are still around and out there, and I think we agree they are, Why didn't they show up at the Democratic National Convention? Because, you know, the ones that I've known don't make much of a distinction between Democrats and Republicans.
No, that's true. I think mostly they've just been saving up their energy. There's actually a kind of irony in their worldview, because on the one hand, many of them will say, you know, they don't particularly care one way or the other. They'll kind of say that they have a preference for Kerry, but they're certainly not devoting their energy to make sure he gets elected, and the argument that they could help Bush doesn't sway them that much. At the same time, there's no question that a real hatred of Bush, you know, the same hatred that many of their kind of, you know, liberals who favor working through the electoral system feel, is motivating them.
Yeah.
It's just that they've decided to make the New York Convention the kind of big showdown of the year.
Yeah.
There's been, you know, meetings every, before they were monthly, now they're bi-monthly, you know, hundreds of groups planning, constant activity, and I think there just wasn't really enough to go around.
You know, the word hatred is one that the folks on the right and on Fox News and whatnot just love to use to juxtapose that word with the word Democrats or liberals or whatever. Don't you think that to the extent that there are people who actually, quote, hate George Bush, end quote, that really it's the kind of hatred that is born out of fear? It's the kind of hatred that people had for Pinochet, that the people had for Mussolini, the fear that this guy is out of control, this guy is doing damage to our nation. And you know, it seems to me, I mean, just you know, as a human being observing human condition, that hatred almost always arises out of fear.
You know, that could be, even though I've had
Michelle, you're breaking up.
And it's a hatred that isn't just born out of the fact that his administration seems in many ways to be kind of running amok. They seem to be completely out of control. It's also a certain, he radiates this smugness, also this, it's really a daily kick in the face, this administration.
Yeah.
He runs government this.
Michelle, are you on a cell
phone? Rebuke the values of a lot of people in New York City.
Yeah, excuse me. Michelle, are you on a cell phone right now?
No, I'm not.
Okay. We've got a very weird phone line. You must have John Ashcroft listening in or something, because you just keep popping in and out and coming and going. What do you expect is going to happen at the convention? I mean, you've been talking to these folks. You just did this great profile piece, a great roundup piece. I recommend people check it out at Salon.com, Michelle Goldberg's piece. Michelle, what is your best take of what's going to happen, and what advice would you have for anyone who's going to be there, not to be part of the demonstrations, but as delegates or as members of the press or as tourists or people who live in New York City?
What I think is going to happen, or what I'm pretty sure is going to happen, is that on August 29th, there's going to be a huge rally.
This is Sunday.
By a group called United for Peace and Justice.
Right. This is Sunday before the convention, right?
And that's the major anti-war organizer here in New York. They are going to... They're fighting right now for access to Central Park. If they don't get it and they're foisted over to the West Side Highway, there's going to be a huge amount of discontent that could lead people, you know, to kind of, that could lead to confrontations. Then on August 30th, there's going to be an illegal march that will most certainly lead to widespread arrests. And on August 31st, there's going to be a day of direct action, which is when a lot of the anarchists are going to spring into action, you know, barricading streets, targeting so-called war profiteers, you know, kind of dogging delegates and harassing them wherever they go. My advice to the press is that I hope some of them come out, you know, come out of the convention and see what people are doing and realize that even though the anarchists are in many ways the most telegenic and the most, you know, kind of sexy, and I'll be covering them along with anyone else, that most of the people, you know, here are going to be the responsible people who are just looking for a way to express their, like, sincere despair with the direction that the country is going in.
Yeah, their objection. They are exercising their First Amendment right of a peaceable assembly to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Right, and it's a right that kind of rather horrifically the mayor of New York, Mike Bloomberg, recently said is a, quote, privilege that can be taken away.
Yeah, well, I ranted about that for a half hour yesterday. It's absolutely mind-boggling that somebody who, I mean, he did have to pay $77 a vote to, you know, and his opponent only spent $17 a vote to get elected mayor of New York, but he had the money, I guess. But still, you would think that he would have bothered to read the Constitution before running for an office like that.
No, it's part of a climate that's really, on the one hand, you don't want to be hysterical and talk about, you know, John Ashcroft is creating a police state, but there really is a climate right now in which there's a kind of presumption that dissent and protest is somehow illegitimate, you know, and it extends from Mike Bloomberg to the FBI knocking on protesters' doors and asking them what they're planning during the convention.
Which raises another important issue, Michelle Goldberg, writer for Salon Magazine, who wrote this "The Whole World is Watching" article here in Salon.com. The FBI, or the New York Times, noted yesterday or the day before this whole thing about the FBI is going and knocking on people's doors. On the one hand, it seems to me if you have groups that are kind of the modern incarnation of the Weather Underground or the SLA or whatever, mm-hmm. who are really and truly bent on doing harm that might even involve killing people. And we have had groups like that in the United States in the past. I mean, we've had homegrown terrorist groups.
I don't think that's the kind of groups we're dealing with right now.
Right, I understand that.
For all I know, they could exist.
I understand, but let me set this up as a hypothetical. They certainly exist outside of the traditional left-wing protest movements. I mean, they just in Texas a month or two ago arrested a guy with thousands of pounds of explosives, you know, literally weapons of mass destruction, mm-hmm. and plans to use them. Didn't get much press because he was white and he was Christian, and he was a conservative. But you know, just like Tim McVeigh, you know, I mean, there are terrorists in the United States who are, you know, so there are people. So operating out of the assumption, which has some validity because we saw it with Tim McVeigh, that there are people here in the United States who believe that violence and perhaps even killing a lot of people is the way to get their political point across or create political change. McVeigh trying to bring about the world that the Turner Diaries had written about. Isn't it appropriate, on the one hand, that the FBI play some sort of a proactive role in trying to identify those people so that that kind of harm can't be brought on us? And on the other hand, isn't it absolutely wrong that the FBI be identifying people who have a history of simply expressing their First Amendment right to dissent and intimidating them? I mean, you know, it seems like there's...
Well, the real problem here is the assumption on the part of the FBI and the Justice Department that a history of protest and dissent is in some way a kind of warning sign for proclivities to terrorism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a connection that has no basis in reality. As far as I know, there has been no anti-war protesters against this particular war that has been involved in any kind of, you know, violent terrorist activity. So the assumption is, It would be in certain ways like responding to Timothy McVeigh by the FBI going around and interviewing, you know, members of Christian congregations because he was a Christian and he then became a right-wing terrorist.
But that is, I mean, that was part of his motivation. I mean, he really and truly believed that, the government would repressively overreact to that bombing and take guns away from everybody in the United States, and that all the good white Christians would rise up and kill off all the people of color and Jews, and that we would be left with and Catholics, and we'd be left with a Protestant white America. I mean, that was the vision that he literally had.
And what's interesting is that that's kind of, you know, Christian terrorism, as far as domestic terrorism goes,
yeah,
most of it is Christian terrorism.
Yeah.
You know, hundreds of bombings of abortion clinics.
Right. It's,
you know,
not, it's just not happening in the left.
Nightclubs.
Michelle,
but
we're out of time.
It's preposterous for the FBI to go door to door.
I agree.
Churches.
Michelle, we're out of time. I just have to thank you very much for writing a brilliant piece. The whole world is watching. Salon.com, Michelle Goldberg. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When you look at a forest, do you see pretty flowers and cute little critters hopping around? Well, when we billionaires look at a forest, we see redwood decks, teak furniture, and reams of bleached white paper. We look at all the untapped natural resources available, and we see opportunity where others can't see the forest for the trees. Aren't you bored of tree huggers whining about the precious old growth forests? Don't they understand the law of supply and demand? The more trees we clear cut, the more scarce we make them, and the more valuable they become as a commodity. So the next time you hear the buzz of chainsaws, know the billionaires are giving Mother Nature more bang for her buck. I'm Zena Fope for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Pick up the billionaire!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We've got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties cause he could.
And welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting events coming up in New York City. Should be an interesting time, and I will be reporting live from the Republican National Convention. They're actually going to let me in, getting reporters' credentials and the whole bit, so we will be broadcasting live from the floor of the convention Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of that week. So stick around. Want to just wrap up this thing we started out the hour with. George Bush saying, well, we're making America safer, and then cutting funding for all the various things that would make America safer. This I think, is an absolute tragedy. We know from the 9/11 Commission's studies that it would cost about $8 billion. That's the cost of about 2 weeks in Iraq. It would cost $8 billion to inspect every single piece of cargo anywhere in the world, at its point of origination, to put agents of the United States government in other countries to inspect cargo before it's loaded on ships coming to the United States. It would cost a lot of money. It's not just a few million. It's not the $800 million that the port folks are saying they need just to enhance security at the ports. That is, you know, to look out for somebody trying to drive an explosive-laden boat up to a port, to take out a port. No, this is to actually inspect the cargo coming in, because right now it is possible that somebody in some other country, since only 3% of our cargo, more or less, is inspected that comes into the United States. And, you know, the way these containers work is you can get a container and you could load it in Malaysia and you could put a nuclear bomb in it and put it on a boat, ship it over here. It comes through a port, New Jersey, New York, whatever. Gets loaded on the back of a 16-wheeler, 18-wheeler truck, and the container just sits right there, right, and gets driven to someplace in the Midwest where, you know, the terrorist takes delivery of it, puts it in place, and detonates it. I mean, this is, Bruce Willis made a movie based on this. I mean, it's just. And $8 billion is what it would cost. The administration has said, no, we're sorry, too expensive. We've got to have tax cuts for millionaires. Tax cuts are more important. We've got to have $1 trillion in tax cuts. The last one, you'll recall, was $300 and $400 billion. Another one about that size before that. Another one before that. Can't do that. It's just too much. We can't inspect all that cargo. Sorry. So if America is going to be in trouble, well, you know, at least the billionaires get their tax cuts. That's the important thing. So priorities. The priorities of this administration are a potential disaster. They are not protecting this country. A tragedy. It's Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver offer.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
How do charter schools, promoted in the President's No Child Left Behind Act, stack up against public schools? Not so well. Data compiled by the American Federation of Teachers shows that fourth graders at charter schools lag 6 months behind students in public schools in reading and math. In addition, there are major discrepancies when it comes to race, with children of varying ethnic backgrounds performing worse in charter schools than their counterparts in urban public schools. In the past, charter schools had been championed as an alternative to poorly performing public schools. The No Child Left Behind Act mandates that public schools that chronically perform poorly are to be restructured as charter schools.
Recently, all charges were dropped against Francisco Herrera, a student intern with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee who was arrested in June for visiting farm workers in the fields. Herrera spent the summer visiting migrants in North Carolina to let them know about U.S. labor laws and protections like the right to earn a minimum wage and receive a pay stub.
They work about 12 hours, sometimes 14 hours a day, bending over, taking cucumbers, doing like 100 buckets a day.
The workers at the farm where he was arrested were being paid $3 an hour.
And we told the workers that what's going to happen, like the grower would come and he's going to be furious. But you guys stand your ground and defend your rights. So the grower came irate. He started screaming at my co-workers, just like, get off my private property, getting to see with this private property and all this stuff.
Herrera said he will continue helping farm workers next summer with the Flock Student Action with Farm Workers program.
Contract negotiations are preventing work crews from Alabama Power from assisting in the Florida cleanup in the aftermath of Hurricane Charley. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have voted to give the power company 48 hours notice if a breakdown in negotiations lead to a strike. A representative of the company said it would be unfair to Floridians if they sent workers that may be affected by a work stoppage.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Feeling that you need to tighten your financial belt? According to the IRS, Americans reported less gross income on their tax returns for the second year in a row. This is the first back-to-back decline in more than a half century. Total income reported in 2002 fell by 2.3% to a little more than $6 trillion. And so far this year, wages aren't set to change the trend.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere. Or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, to Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. I want to talk a little bit about the economy. John Snow this afternoon, an hour after this program ends at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, is going to be on an online forum called Ask the White House. And, I have some questions for the White House. The Center for American Progress put together some good ones on their website, their progress report, which David Sirota, Christy Harvey, Judd Legume, and Jonathan Baskin put together. I think the big thing to understand is there's two of them. One is that the core tenet of conservative economics operates out of the worldview that what someone has, they got themselves, and therefore they're entitled to. And it sounds really good.
Yeah, I got my riches. I got it myself. It's mine.
Ignoring the fact that people participate in things like getting public education. That helps them get where they are.
Well, no, I went to a private school because my family's rich.
Okay, you had a rich family helped you get where you are. For example, Bill Gates Sr. talks about how, they made their money on the computer, on the intranet infrastructure,
much of their money. And the Internet was invented by government. Al Gore never said he invented the Internet. That was a creation of the Republican National Committee, that lie. But what he did do was he signed a bill that helped create the Internet and made a speech about how proud he was that he had signed legislation which had authorized what was then called DARPA, as I recall, the earliest incarnation of the Internet. Well, that was your tax dollars and mine. And so, says Mr. Gates Sr., Bill Gates Sr., yeah, we have some obligation to pay back to society that we use their infrastructure. He used, for example, the court system to enforce contracts. He used the Secretary of State's office in Seattle to incorporate his corporation. He used the financial systems of the United States to make things work, to create, you know, to have a stable currency. These are all things that are part of the commons, and they're paid for with taxes. Taxes, as Franklin Roosevelt said, are the price of admission to a civil society. And there are many, many benefits of taxation. The benefits are you have a fire department, you have a police department, you have laws that work. People say, oh, but we want free trade. Well, you know, there's over 900 pages of regulations in GATT, in the WTO. That's free? No, it's very highly regulated. But it's regulated in a way that works increasingly to the benefit of big corporations and not to the benefit of national economies or small entrepreneurs. And therefore, they've chosen to call it free. This is another classic example of the framing of these guys. But, I think it's really important to understand how these things are set up and understand the premises that are being advanced by the right in ways that ultimately are destructive to democracy. What the end result is, you get this essentially, very wealthy ruling class, which is, of course, the classic conservative ideal. Edmund Burke, back in the 1700s, talked about how, or was it the early 1800s, talked about how it's important, that we have this. He said it does us no harm if a hairdresser participates in civil society, but if he is allowed to rule, then that's a crime against society. Well, that's the conservative worldview. Very simple, very straightforward. I want to come back to this in a few minutes. This is a good topic, in particular because Jon Snow is going to be talking about this afternoon. But first, I'm very pleased in particular, and to have Mark Crispin Miller on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tom.
I'm
fine. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, Mark is the author of the Bush Dyslexicon. He has a new book out called Cruel and Unusual, Bush Cheney's New World Order. First of all, that the cover picture of George W. Bush on this book is absolutely mind-boggling. I see it's from Reuters New Media.
Yeah, it was a Reuters photo.
What do you know about it? Do you know anything about that picture?
It was a friend of mine. It was just filed in a news report of some kind, and a friend of mine saw it and emailed it around. When it was time to design the cover, I gave the publisher that picture, and the rest is history.
Yeah, it's a
frightening face. You know?
Yeah, that's George W. It's the classic abused child look on his face, frankly.
Yeah.
Having for 5 years been the executive director of a residential treatment facility for abused kids, I have seen that look.
Oh, really?
But in any case, you suggest that Team Bush, that was 25 years ago, you suggest that Team Bush has imposed upon this nation and the world a reckless and irrational regime that would have shocked the framers of our Constitution. What are you talking about there?
I'm talking about a movement that I think we could probably accurately term Christo-fascism. This is a very peculiar and late development in right-wing Christian theology that is pushing quite deliberately and self-consciously for a theocracy. Now, I'm not talking about Jim and Tammy Faye Baker here.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about most mainline evangelists. Although a lot of the top televangelistic demagogues have, over the last 20 years, moved closer to a theocratic position, people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Well, the argument I'm making is that this is not just your average presidential race. This is not your grandfather's Republican Party. This is not a movement that can be explained entirely in economistic terms. In other words, it's not just about the money. A great deal of it is. But underlying the whole enterprise and impelling it is a powerful religious fanaticism that is in its way as intent on theocratizing our society as the Islamists are intent on theocratizing theirs.
Do you think, Mark, that it is an irony and a coincidence that we have been attacked by religious fundamentalists and we seem to be responding with something that resembles religious fundamentalism, or do you think that it's a predictable consequence of this?
Oh, well, my view is that George W. Bush is God's gift to the Islamist extremists. They couldn't ask for a better president of the United States. He has their mentality. That is to say, he is convinced that the Christians are under attack by a force that wants to wipe them out. In fact, there's a new biography, a new book about the Bushes, a pro-Bush book called The Bushes, Portrait of a Dynasty. And in there, there's a quote from a close relative of Bush's who says, George sees this as a religious war. He's talking about Iraq.
Right.
George sees this as a religious war. He does not have a PC view of this war. His view is that they are trying to kill the Christians, and we, the Christians, will strike back with more force and more ferocity than they will ever know. Now, this is typical. This notion of being oneself at risk and fighting back only in self-defense. This notion that your enemy is so ruthless and dangerous that you must use every means at your disposal to wipe out that enemy. That's exactly the same worldview that we get from the Islamists.
It's the ends justify the means strategy, and that we saw by the fascists during World War II.
Exactly.
But you know, there's also a certain hypocrisy there. I mean, in the Sudan right now, you've got a million or more, possibly 2 million people who are on the edge of death, and probably 20% of them are Christians. Maybe even more. I mean, nobody really knows for sure. A lot of them are animists practicing tribal religions, but Christianity is well established among the black Africans of central and southern Sudan, and the Islamic lighter skinned Africans in the north are exterminating them, and yet this administration is just sitting around. So when you've got Muslims actually exterminating Christians, we're really saying nothing about it. But in Iraq, you know, what was the deal?
Well, I believe in complete accuracy here.
Yeah.
The crisis in Sudan did, in fact, arouse the Bush administration. I'm talking now about southern Sudan, which is settled down somewhere.
Darfur.
Darfur is in eastern Sudan.
Ah,
The southern Sudan conflict was, in fact, resolved, and our government was, in fact, involved in that resolution, and it was, in fact, because of these Christians, they did the right thing for their religious reasons. What's going on now in Eastern Sudan is not so cut and dried in religious terms, and so we're not involved. Everything that this administration does, Tom, everything it does, foreign and domestic, is basically about fulfilling the agenda of apocalyptic types. I mean, we got a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriages. We have a full court press against abortion rights. We have an abstinence-based AIDS policy. I mean, this is genocidal. It's unbelievable. But it's abstinence-based. And the latest regulations at the Centers for Disease Control actually mandate that anyone who is abroad doing health work for the government must tell foreign people that condoms don't work.
Yeah.
And that's it's false. But because it is in accord with their religious ideology, I could go on and on. The advisory committees of the federal government have all been staffed with zealots, with fanatics. Our policy on Israel is dictated by, the Christians' eschatological concerns about, the end of time and so on. And even our environmental policies are strongly reinforced by a certain theocratic position which holds that our relations to the earth must be based only on Genesis 1:28, which means we have dominion over the beasts of the field and the birds of the air.
Right. Well, and then you've got James Watt, when he was Secretary of the Interior during the Reagan administration, being asked why he was selling off Western lands to be basically raped and pillaged by strip mining and whatnot, and he said, well, one of these days soon Jesus is going to return and make all things new. So what does it matter?
But James Watt has recently said, everything that's happening in Washington now is a continuation of what I did 20 years ago. He's very pleased.
Oh, yeah.
He was a kind of an early warning sign, a token member of that movement that the Reagan team included. Now, the Bush family has famously shifted its political sympathies. These theocratic types never liked Bush Sr. They saw him as a wimpy Episcopalian.
Yeah. Mark Crispin Miller, the author of The Bush Dyslexicon, his new book, Cruel and Unusual. Mark, we've got to take a break for just a minute here, if you can stick around. I know you're only with us until the bottom of the hour, right?
I got to catch a flight.
Okay, yeah. If you can just stick around for a couple of minutes, we'll get through this break, and I got a couple more questions for you, if it's all right.
Great.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes after the hour. Stick around. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Nervous Nellies are saying that coal-fired power plants emit unhealthy levels of mercury vapor, which contaminates our seafood. Yes, mercury poisoning can cause neurological damage in children, but is that necessarily a bad thing? Now that we're outsourcing our tech support jobs to India, we no longer need smart workers. Instead, we need compliant employees who will put in longer hours for less money. So if your mom chowed down on tile fish while you were in the womb, you've got a leg up on the new economy. President Bush relaxed clean air standards so we can burn more coal than ever without monitoring mercury levels. Don't worry. With mercury, you won't remember what you were worried about in the first place. I'm Xenophobe for this billionaire moment.
This billionaire moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Mark Crispin Miller, author of Cruel and Unusual, his new book about Bush Cheney's New World Order. Mark, the description that you are, the words, this description that you're laying out of the Bush administration and their agendas is frankly shocking. I mean, I suspect a lot of people are saying, come on, it couldn't be. This is just a guy who believes in his religion, but he happens to be president. I mean, you know, would they really do things like alter public records, suppress information, even misrepresent the character and history of the United States in order to advance a religious agenda? I mean, could that be?
That's happening. They routinely scrub scientific data from government websites. You can buy creationist books in the bookstores of some of our national parks. Moreover, as I explain in Cruel and Unusual, they have no qualms about lying for their cause. I mean, they say this explicitly in their own works. The irony here, Tom, is that, you know, this movement, which actually has some of its roots in the John Birch Society, this movement has turned into a mirror image of the kind of caricature of the communist subversive that the right used to scream about, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. These people are, you know, infiltrating governments, they take over school boards, they take over state legislatures. As Ralph Reed said, we paint our faces and ride by night. The next thing you know, you're in a body bag. I'm quoting Ralph Reed. Now, whoa. You know, they are politically quite dangerous. They are a subversive movement. And what they're after, you know, I'm pleased to hear that you have this book with Jefferson at the center of it.
Yeah, in fact, there's an entire chapter in there about Jefferson, Madison, Washington, all of them fighting so hard against particularly up in Massachusetts, against the religious right. You know, Ben Franklin left Boston when he was 17 years old because he couldn't deal with the theocrats.
Well, right, exactly. I this critique, too, is rooted in Jefferson's experience, particularly in the election of 1800 when the religious right of his day came after. But the point is, the thing we have to understand is this movement is interested in taking us back to a moment prior to the Enlightenment.
Yeah.
Prior to the Enlightenment. And this is a threat the likes of which we've never faced before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I would say actually we have. I mean, the Salem community in Salem, Massachusetts.
Right, but I'm talking about the national level. This administration is not operating within recognizable American political tradition.
Since 1776, let's say.
That's what I mean. The Republic was founded.
That's right. Because, you know, I mean, just 10 years before that, the world that these guys want to bring about actually did exist in many communities in Massachusetts.
And in Connecticut, too.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that so many people miss. And the other thing that I find mind-boggling is that there's this guy down in Texas who is actually writing textbooks, American history textbooks, that misquote and actually make up quotes from the founders that now you can be found, that can be found on right-wing websites all over the place, essentially arguing that the founders were all super Christians and that this was a Christian nation, when in fact George Washington was a deist, Thomas Jefferson was a deist, Ben Franklin was an agnostic or a deist, you know, and on the list goes. These guys, and some of them were very strong Christians, but they also believed that Christianity should be in the churches, not in the halls of government.
Oh, exactly. In fact, and it's also worth noting that for well over 100 years, the separation of church and state was also championed by the Baptists, by the Presbyterians, by the dissenting religions.
Right, because they were afraid another religion would take over.
Exactly, exactly. They were afraid of an Episcopalian...
Why aren't the Catholics taking that position right now, since this is being advanced by Protestants?
Well, you mentioned that, and that's true, but it's interesting what bedfellows we have here, because the central organization for the theocratic movement, the Council on National Policy, has as one of its members and donors the Reverend Sun Moon, and this guy's not even a Christian.
Oh, yeah. In fact, he's declared he's the fulfillment of Jesus. He's the new Messiah. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking, Mark, I know you got to go here. You've got a plane to catch. I appreciate your sharing this short time with us on the program. Mark Crispin Miller, the author of Cruel and Unusual, his new book, Bush Cheney's New World Order. I highly recommend you check out this book. Get out there and buy a copy of it. 29 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Thank you, Mark. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
How do charter schools, promoted in the President's No Child Left Behind Act, stack up against public schools? Not so well. Data compiled by the American Federation of Teachers shows that fourth graders at charter schools lag 6 months behind students in public schools in reading and math. In addition, there are major discrepancies when it comes to race, with children of varying ethnic backgrounds performing worse in charter schools than their counterparts in urban public schools. In the past, charter schools had been championed as an alternative to poorly performing public schools. The No Child Left Behind Act mandates that public schools that chronically perform poorly are to be restructured as charter schools.
Recently, all charges were dropped against Francisco Arida, a student intern with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee who was arrested in June for visiting farm workers in the fields. Arida spent the summer visiting migrants in North Carolina to let them know about U.S. labor laws and protections like the right to earn a minimum wage and receive a pay stub.
They work about 12 hours, sometimes 14 hours a day, bending over, picking cucumbers, doing like 100 buckets a day.
The workers at the farm where he was arrested were being paid $3 an hour.
And we told the workers that what's going to happen, like the grower would come and he's going to be furious, but you guys stand your ground and defend your rights. So the grower came irate. He started screaming at my co-worker, just like, get off my private property, getting to see that this is private property and all this stuff.
Arida said he will continue helping farm workers next summer with the Flock Student Action with Farm Workers program.
Contract negotiations are preventing work crews from Alabama Power from assisting in the Florida cleanup in the aftermath of Hurricane Charley. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have voted to give the power company 48 hours notice if a breakdown in negotiations lead to a strike. A representative of the company said it would be unfair to Floridians if they sent workers that may be affected by a work stoppage.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
feeling that you need to tighten your financial belt? According to the IRS, Americans reported less gross income on their tax returns for the second year in a row. This is the first back-to-back decline in more than a half century. Total income reported in 2002 fell by 2.3% to a little more than $6 trillion. And so far this year, wages aren't set to change the trend.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mama, it's hard to hide, 'cause you know I'm 6'5", in a land where the people are short. I just slip on a burka, head on down the Loya Jirga, poke around all day at the Sharia court.
And welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number if you'd like to call in, be on the program. It's time for our report from Washington, D.C. with Ellen Radner of the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. It looks as like Senator Kerry today was at the VFW in Cincinnati speaking to them. And as opposed to what Bush said yesterday, he is now saying that, well, he has walked in the shoes of these people, and that he wants to put 40,000 new troops in, much more flexible, but not actually in Iraq. And he wants to put more money in where there's first responders. He said 90%, I was not aware of this, of all active duty personnel have already done a stint in Iraq. And
wow.
He also wants to put...
That's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And he also wants to put money into special forces. And this comes on the heels, of course, of Bush saying yesterday that he wants to reduce forces in foreign lands. Of course, Bush did not say he wanted to overall reduce the number of people in the military, but the Kerry camp has gone right on that. Now, two other interesting things. Edwards is also on the campaign trail today, and he is in New Orleans. He said that family need funds, and not the kinds of funds that essentially go to Halliburton. And so he was using that in the South, which is, of course, close to Halliburton's home quarters. Meanwhile, the Bush campaign is decided that they are going to go after women and Hispanics, particularly suburban women and Hispanics. They feel like they have almost lost them. They went soft on them, and now they are going to deal with this by campaigning. Essentially, having Bush campaign with Laura Bush was very, very popular in that group, and, of course, to have Bush speaking Spanish. So look forward to seeing Bush do a lot more Spanish-speaking kind of events.
Yeah, and also he's promoting things like being opposed to birth control, which caters to the Catholic crowd in as much as Hispanics have typically in the past voted as a Hispanic voting block, and now they're trying to split them and remind them of the fact that they're Catholic as well as Hispanic and go after them as, please join our religious crusade.
Well, it's interesting because given the main piece of information, the New York Times did a piece on this today about charter schools not being terribly successful. Hispanics, as you know, have one of the lowest high school graduation rates of any ethnic group in the country, and particularly immigrant Hispanics. And so, because it's just education has never been as much a part of higher education, the Hispanic cultures in Central America, Mexico, et cetera, different than Spain, obviously. And so his No Child Left Behind Act, however, he's going to have to do some explaining on that, because that really runs counter, since it involves so much testing, to what he's trying to do in terms of trying to get Hispanic votes.
Yeah, he'll figure a way to spin it, though.
I'm sure he will.
They definitely will. So what else is happening in Washington, D.C.?
There was a closed hearing, which we don't know what was said, George Tenet before the 9/11 Commission. And just in about an hour, there are going to be more hearings that deal with specific recommendations from the 9/11 Commission. There will also be some even on Friday. So they're really, really pushing those through. And as if an olive branch to the Bush campaign, al-Sadr says that he's agreeing to end the uprising. Because I'll tell you, if Iraq goes,
so goes the Bush presidency.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't you say Iraq is already gone? What, you think
well,
it's, you think
for
it's
my purposes,
recovered?
It was already gone. I was offered a trip there by the Pentagon on the 6th of September, and I'm not going to go simply because I think it's too dangerous. I was there, as you know, a year ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are times that reporting your life is a little more important than a report.
Well, we've already, I mean, it's like Afghanistan. We've lost so much of Afghanistan now that we basically only control parts of Kabul and parts of one other city. I forget the name of it, but basically
that's right.
That's
the Karzai, that we call him the mayor of Kabul.
Yeah, and in Afghanistan and in Iraq now, we have lost a half a dozen cities, and this isn't getting much coverage. Fallujah, for example, is now under strict Islamic law. They if you are caught selling alcohol or consuming it, they drag you through the streets and flog you, 60 lashes, and you know the barbers can no longer give Western haircuts, and the women are wearing veils, and it's we have no presence there at all, none whatsoever.
No. Let me tell you something. I had a flat tire in Fallujah last year. It was not an exciting experience.
Shoo. I mean, how many Americans do you think realize how much of Iraq we've already lost?
I don't think people have any, you know. Remember, as I always say, people don't pay attention to international issues unless the tank is coming up their driveway.
Yeah.
And I don't think most Americans have any sense at all. And the only way they do have a sense is when the veterans start talking.
Yeah. Yeah, and
coming
interestingly,
back from Iraq.
Interestingly, yesterday we had a fellow Kevin down in Tampa called in and said he had just been talking with his son in Iraq and who's coming back home pretty soon, and he said things are worse here than ever. This kid has been there for a year.
Let me tell you something. We haven't been talking that long on the air, Tom, but I loved Iraq so much that if that place ever got straightened out, I swear I would buy a condo on the Tigris. I just felt very comfortable there, very at home. I loved the people, as opposed to other Mediterranean places where people always say, oh, you look Mediterranean. Everybody thought I looked Iraqi. But if it's too dangerous for me to go, and I would go in a heartbeat, it is too dangerous.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. You know, George Bush going in with no plan for the peace, no plan. You know, it's just such a tragedy. Ellen, thanks so much for the call. It's
so
good to
hear
from you. Yep, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great one. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes before the hour. I know some of you called when Mark Crispin Miller was on, and he had come in on a phone line that we couldn't get two people on at the same time through this board. And so my apologies, I couldn't take your call. So if you want to call now, unless those people who were calling to talk to, you know, specific questions for Mark Crispin Miller, which I well understand. And again, I apologize. We couldn't put your calls on the line. Our number 1-866-889-8894. If you want to comment on the issues of the day, this economy thing. Why is President Bush advocating a tax policy that shifts the tax burden onto the shoulders of the middle class? That's one of the questions that I'd ask Jon Snow this afternoon at 4 o'clock when he does Ask the White House online forum. President Bush said the overwhelming benefit of his tax cuts would go to the middle class. Remember that? Remember that? I'm going to do a middle-class tax cut. Somehow that's not quite what happened. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's pick up a call here. Storm in Southern Illinois on the line. Hey, Storm, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'd like to make a possible suggestion for a future program for you.
Sure.
And this would be the... maybe could cover the art of debate on how one side tries to convince the other side or bystanders to their way of thinking. Items such as inoculation and changing the subject and accusing your opponent of what you're doing. And just there's a whole litany of tricks you can use on your opponent.
Yeah,
I think it'd be useful. Now, you have very astute callers. But I'm sure there are some out there that would find that program to be very useful.
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, I was, you know, in debating society in high school. And
cool.
Interestingly, none of those things that you just named are allowed in a debate.
Right.
They're not allowed because they're unfair.
But the neocon talk show hosts like Bort Squeeze in Atlanta and the Gas Bag and all those guys use those gimmicks all the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's just absolutely standard operating procedure. And they try them on me, and I call them on it. I think that one of the things that I want to get into, in fact, more in the future on this show, because I think it's really important to educate people about it, are things like, you know, George Lakoff talks about framing. That's one of several NLP techniques that the cons have been using for about 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
They really decided to make a big investment in understanding psychology. And the first payback from that investment, and this was in the 70s, and the first payback of that was in the early 80s when Newt Gingrich came up with his word list. Remember his word list, his list of words that whenever you speak of a conservative, you have to put words, you know, there was about 35 words you attach to them, positive, vision, fair-minded, blah, blah, blah. Whenever you talk about a liberal or liberal policies, you have to use words like failed and discredited, things like that. And now they actually run seminars in Washington, D.C., these big think tanks that are funded to the tune of, you know, millions and millions of dollars every year by the very, very wealthy conservatives, the Richard Mellon Scaifes of the world. They actually run these seminars for political candidates and talk show hosts and opinion leaders, they call them, on the right, to learn the language, to learn how to frame devices, to learn how to frame issues. And it's very sophisticated stuff, and they do an enormous amount of polling. You know, we go through 20, 30 different terms before they figure out that describing a late-term abortion when the mother might die if it's not otherwise done should be called a partial birth abortion. It's not a medical term. It's a term that the right wing came up with as a result of polling, of doing focus groups and finding what was the phrase that would produce, you know, whether accurate or not, that would produce the biggest response. A good one, Storm. What I'm going to be doing is bringing more and more of that into this show as time goes on, rather than just do one show on it, because I think it's a very, very important critical issue. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
And thanks for listening to us there on WINI. Do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was reading a column today in the Washington Post by probably one of our favorites, George F. Will, lamenting the difficulties of establishing or producing a democracy in Iraq. And there's this one line in there that he just says, democracy loosely, very loosely defined as government responsive to gusts of public passions might fail or it might succeed ruinously. A government that is all sail and no anchor might produce popular choices that lead through anarchy to civil war or national fragmentation or fragmentation forestalled by Bonapartism, Francoism, or some other variant of authoritarianism. So why is he it seems like conservatives like to harken back to the French Revolution as like this, you know, that's what, you know, you have to fear about democracy.
Well,
what is that about?
What it's about is that the conservative philosophy is fundamentally anti-democratic. In fact, a lot of the more articulate talk show hosts on the right, like Neil Bortz, for example, will say, we don't live in a democracy. You call up
right.
And say, American, this is not a democracy, it's a republic.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry. In fact, it is a democratic republic.
Right.
And, you know, a constitutionally limited democratic republic, if you want to get absolutely precise about it. But they really don't like that word democracy. Because it implies the antithesis of the conservative worldview, which is that there should be a relatively small ruling elite, that some people mm-hmm. are born to rule, and that the Calvinistic notion, which really informed many of the people who first populated this country, the Calvinists who came over here from England in the 1600s to avoid religious persecution, well, not just the Calvinists, the Pilgrims and the Puritans in particular, but the Calvinists who are still around lay out this notion that wealth is a sign of a blessing from God.
Right.
And that therefore those who are the most wealthy are the most blessed by God, and therefore it is most appropriate that they should rule. And which is, you know, just a candidly anti-democratic position. And so
mm-hmm.
so the core conservative notion is one that's anti-democratic, and that's one of the reasons why conservatives by and large are in favor of public positions that harm democracy, that harm the creation of a middle class, where you would have a strong, large majority of people taking, you know, being politically active, taking, and rather have a small kind of born to rule minority, or you know, blessed by God by virtue of wealth. It's very.
Well, what about, you know, this reference to the French Revolution, and you know, and it's,
oh, that was their high point. I mean, see when the American Revolution happened in 1776, it was something that had never been done before. I mean, arguably the Athenian Greeks they invented the word democracy. They had this democracy, but Socrates throughout that, you know, was always being skeptical. Plato was skeptical. So the revolution of the 30 and the revolution of the 400, these two revolutions that happened in the later years of the democracy of Athens, where it was overthrown and taken over by absolute, oligarchical tyrants. I mean, you know, it made Saddam Hussein look like a good guy. In both cases, they let Socrates continue to live in his mansion. The reason why? Well, because they were students of his. And, you know, there has historically, from Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle until 1776, there was this extreme skepticism about democracy. And the democracy in Greece, of course, it required 6,001 people to show up to change a law. So it was, you know, a pure democracy. And the founders realized you can't do that with a country the size of the United States. You might be able to do it with a little island nation like Athens, but you can't do it with a country the size of the United States. So they were doing something that had literally never been tried before, and the rest of the world was saying, ain't no way this is going to work. This is going to, you know, in 1834, Alexis de Tocqueville came over from France, and he was a member of the lesser nobility of France, and wrote Democracy in America, and it was basically a book saying, well, it's interesting what's going on, but it's not going to last. You know, the aristocracy is the only lasting form of government. We've got 6,000 years of proof of that. And so the world was very, very skeptical. And when the French, looking at what we had done in the late 1770s, said, okay, let's do the same thing. And then immediately after the revolution, it flipped into the terror, you know, Robespierre and the whole bit. And it was a disaster. It was, you know, at first Jefferson was like, yeah, go on, go, guys. This is great. You know, overthrow the king. And then it turned ugly. I mean, it turned into this reactionary, and then out of that rose Napoleon, you know, in the early 1800s, you know, this authoritarian rule. And so what's happened is the conservatives of that era, you know, and all the other European nations were saying, see, we told you it wouldn't work. Look what happened in France. That's eventually going to happen in the United States. And they're still saying it. Right? They're still saying it.
Right.
That's the answer, John. And sorry for the long history lesson.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time. John, I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. We got to take a break here. 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. Stick around.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
From uneducated laughingstock to government minister, an African woman's story of courage. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Frances Moore LePay met a lot of courageous people while researching her book, Hope's Edge, but few were as inspiring as Wangari Maathai, an uneducated young woman concerned about the loss of forests in her East African country of Kenya.
Here's a woman who in 1977 planted 7 trees on Earth Day, and her vision was tree planting throughout her country of Kenya because of the loss of the forest there. The government said unschooled village women can't plant trees. It takes foresters to do that. Well, she started a village movement of tree planting and has succeeded in 20 million trees being planted and surviving in Kenya through nurseries run by unschooled village women.
LePay tells Maathai's story in her new book called You Have the Power. She describes how Maathai's tree planting program drew the unwelcome attention of Kenya's dictator, Daniel Arap Moi. The young woman was ridiculed, beaten, and imprisoned for her efforts. But things have changed. Democratic elections in 2002 brought in a new government headed by the National Rainbow Coalition. LePay says Wangari Maathai is now part of the new power structure.
And here a woman who had been jailed and beaten by the Moi government is now the deputy minister for the environment in the new government and helping to write a new constitution for Kenya.
LePay says Maathai is a person of unusual courage and persistence, and her story can serve as an inspiration to others fighting an uphill battle to protect the environment.
When we were there in Kenya, her message was that she didn't know that she could succeed. Her message was that she just kept walking.
That's Frances Moore LePay, author of You Have the Power. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough. Yeah, we look in the mirror. Yeah, we want to give up.
And welcome back. Next week. Yes, next week. It's going to happen. Next week it's going to happen. Thousands of workers are going to lose overtime compensation under the Bush administration's new labor policies. Thanks to George W. Bush and Elaine Chao, Economic Policy Institute published a study showing that under the new rules published by the Department of Labor, millions of American workers will be stripped of their overpay. At risk are, quote, nearly 2 million administrative workers who can be classified as, quote, team leaders, end quote, and will thus lose overtime protection. An additional 920,000 workers who can be reclassified as, quote, learned professionals, end quote, even though they do not have college degrees, would be similarly affected. The report also said that 1.4 million workers could lose overtime protection by being reclassified as executives, as could an estimated 130,000 chefs and cooks, 160,000 financial service workers, and 117,000 teachers and computer programmers. At the same time, a recent report by 3 former top-ranking Labor Department officials found, and I quote, implementation of these new regulations will harm rather than promote and protect the interests of United States workers and their families. Well, gee, what a surprise. I mean, has anybody ever really seriously thought that this administration had any concern at all for workers and their families beyond tossing sound bites at them to get votes? Every piece of light. We've had a contest running on this program for a year. Name one, and I started when I had Congressman Tom Tancredo on, the Republican from Colorado, and I said, Congressman Tancredo, can you name one piece of legislation that your party has put forward since George Bush came into office that benefits primarily we, the people, individuals or workers, rather than corporations? And he was unable to name one. If anybody can come up with just one, I'll give him a free copy of my book, What Would Jefferson Do? We had one person who sort of won the contest with the identity theft law that went into place. And then later we discovered that the primary beneficiaries of that are not we the people. It's the credit card companies. Because if your credit card identity is stolen, the credit card companies take the hit, not you. So, you know, who would think? Who would be surprised by this? It's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. Well, it all starts next week. It all starts next week. And let's hope those 2 million people, 3, 4 million people, however many are going to be affected, wake up and start getting politically active. Take it to the polls, the problems that they're having and the problems that they're facing, and do something about it. Because it is time to take America back from these right-wing cranks that are trying to run the show. Time is now. Well, November 2nd.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
How do charter schools, promoted in the President's No Child Left Behind Act, stack up against public schools? Not so well. Data compiled by the American Federation of Teachers shows that fourth graders at charter schools lag 6 months behind students in public schools in reading and math. In addition, there are major discrepancies when it comes to race, with children of varying ethnic backgrounds performing worse in charter schools than their counterparts in urban public schools. In the past, charter schools had been championed as an alternative to poorly performing public schools. The No Child Left Behind Act mandates that public schools that chronically perform poorly are to be restructured as charter schools.
Recently, all charges were dropped against Francisco Herrera, a student intern with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, who was arrested in June for visiting farm workers in the fields. Herrera spent the summer visiting migrants in North Carolina to let them know about U.S. labor laws and protections, like the right to earn a minimum wage and receive a pay stub.
They work about 12 hours, sometimes 14 hours a day, bending over, taking cucumbers, doing like 100 buckets a day.
The workers at the farm where he was arrested were being paid $3 an hour.
And we told the workers that what's going to happen, like the grower would come and he's going to be furious. But you guys stand your ground and defend your rights. So the grower came irate. He started screaming at my coworker, just like, get out of my private property, being succeed, but this is private property and all this stuff.
Arita said he will continue helping farm workers next summer with the Flock Student Action with Farm Workers program.
Contract negotiations are preventing work crews from Alabama Power from assisting in the Florida cleanup in the aftermath of Hurricane Charley. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have voted to give the power company 48 hours notice if a breakdown in negotiations lead to a strike. A representative of the company said it would be unfair to Floridians if they sent workers that may be affected by a work stoppage.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Feeling that you need to tighten your financial belt? According to the IRS, Americans reported less gross income on their tax returns for the second year in a row. This is the first back-to-back decline in more than a half century. Total income reported in 2002 fell by 2.3% to a little more than $6 trillion. And so far this year, wages aren't set to change the trend.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to people in the news who've got their tongues moving 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today, I've got a network of goobers for you. The honchos of NBC, CBS, and ABC. These conglomerate media barons have decreed that this year's national political conventions are worthy of only 1 hour of primetime coverage and only 3 nights of each convention. These conventions will produce the next president, who will decide everything from war to taxation. Yet the corporate arbiters of our public airwaves deem it more important to rebroadcast reruns of sitcoms than to cover our nation's quadrennial rituals of democracy. The honchos say that the conventions are scripted events that are not, quote, something we need to cover on the broadcast television network, as ABC News president so regally put it. Even news icon Dan Rather of CBS, who has fought in the past for more airtime for convention coverage, now refers to them as a, quote, money-raising lobbyist hunting ground infomercial. Well, yes, what takes place inside the hall is a parade of pontification and posturing. But why not go outside the hall, where two huge stories of national importance are playing out? First is that very lobbyist hunting ground that Rather decries. It would be great TV to have investigative reporters poke their cameras into the exclusive watering holes where corporate lobbyists are schmoozing with top elected officials and blatantly buying our government. Second is the astonishing police crackdown against ordinary citizens who dare to protest at these conventions. Like a third world dictatorship, our government now routinely uses massive and abusive force to shut down democratic expression, and it's time for the media to expose it. This is Jim Hightower saying, there's breaking news right in front of these media gooberheads. If only they had the journalistic gumption and integrity to cover it.
Buy Goodfellas on DVD today. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times calls it the best mob movie ever.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The masterpiece by Martin Scorsese, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, is on a 2-disc special edition DVD.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
Loaded with bonus features, including director commentary, documentaries, and more.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
Goodfellas, buy it today on DVD. Rated R.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for our rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
You know, Jefferson used to write very often in his private letters about the generation of 76, the spirit of 76. Today, 76 days to regime change in the United States. It's been 1,080 days since 9/11, 733 days since that second major act of terrorism on American soil, the release of anthrax. We're still clueless about who did it. 733 days later, 650 days since we declared a search for weapons of mass destruction, which, by the way, is still going on to the tune of millions of taxpayer dollars, and 437 days since the wife of Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame, was outed by that cancer on American society, Bob Novak. And now you've got all these journalists going to jail over this. No, Novak won't, of course, be going to jail over this. Unless somebody decides to get really serious about honestly prosecuting what's been going on. Pretty unlikely with the Bush administration in power. It's just, it's not the kind of thing that I think you can reasonably expect. You know, the a senior administration official has committed treason by leaking the name of a CIA officer, thus bringing down an entire major CIA counterterrorism operation that operated in multiple countries. And what does George W. have to say?
There's no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Oh, that was the wrong clip. Sorry.
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
No idea. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. The website, TomHartman.com. We've got a new chat room up. The Democratic Forum has installed new software. And so you've got to, if you had saved the link to the old chat room, dump it and go to TomHartman.com, click chat room. It'll get you to the new Democratic Forum, then click on the Tom Hartman Show, and it'll open the chat room window for you, get you in there. So, you know, if you want to participate. In fact, it's full of folks right now. Great conversation. Nice to see Harriet in there, the SysOp of the Forum, Democratic Forum, one of the finer places on CompuServe. No cost to participate. All you have to do is register. And if you have an AOL screen name or a CompuServe ID, of course, you don't even have to register. You just pop in and poof, there you are. Anyhow, that's a lot in the news today. I want to share George Bush. Despite his latest claim that he's, quote, getting the job done, this is his new slogan, we're getting the job done. The West Virginia Bureau of Employment Programs issued a report yesterday proving Bush's economic policies are harming the country. The West Virginia Bureau of Employment, 1,700 jobs in that state lost just in the month of July. Since Bush first took office, 7,600 jobs have been lost in West Virginia on net. Berkeley County, West Virginia, which Bush will visit yesterday, has lost one in five manufacturing jobs since he took office. In January of 2001, 1,340 Berkeley County workers were unemployed. Today it's 1,830 Berkeley County workers, a 37% increase. And yet this guy has the audacity to show up in town and saying, we're getting the job done. Well, yeah, he is. He's getting the job done for the multinational corporations that feed money into his reelection campaign. So I suppose there's an element of truth-telling there. I suppose you could say that. Let's take a few calls here. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Rick in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm glad you're coming here.
Me too.
And a couple of things. Yesterday you said that you were surprised by so little information about jobs and workers on Mr. Nader's website. I'm not. The guy has seven industries, and not one of them is represented by a union.
Really?
No, he is.
Seven industries? What do you mean?
Well, they've tried to unionize his industries, and he's fought them every time.
What industries?
The seven that he has.
I didn't know that Ralph Nader owned any.
Yeah, he had. He does.
You're talking about businesses?
Yeah, businesses.
Yeah, like Public Citizen and the Center for Auto Safety. These are nonprofit organizations.
But they've tried to unionize what he's done. He's fought them.
Really?
I did not know that. You know, he has all those stocks anti-environmental stocks and nuclear stocks and stuff like that. I don't trust this guy at all.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. Really, what I called about. I think we ought to start thinking about what the October surprise might be.
Yeah, we've got a contest going for
that.
Do you?
By the way. Okay, well, that's what I was going to suggest.
Yeah.
I want to put in a Cheney heart attack.
Okay. Well, I suspect somebody has mentioned that, but I go to tomhartman.com and click on message boards.
I will do that.
And on it's permanently at the top of the election domestic politics part of our message board is the thread where you can post your suggestion for what it's going to be. And on November 3rd, we're going to look back, and whoever correctly identified the greatest number of October surprises or September and July surprise, whatever, you know,
right.
and identified them first, because when you post there, it's carved in stone. I mean, it's right there, and you can see it. You can go back and delete your posts, of course,
right.
but it's there. And then we're going to give away a copy of October Surprise by Barbara Honegger, the original book about the Reagan-Bush October Surprise when George Herbert Walker Bush went over to France and negotiated with Ayatollah, with a representative of Ayatollah Khomeini to hang on to the hostages, which is what, of course, allowed Ronald Reagan to win that election.
Right.
Without it, he would have lost terribly. And in fact, by the way, this book is a real collector's item. They are very rare. And somebody told me that there are 23 copies available on Amazon.com. I encourage people to go on Amazon and buy them, because you just cannot find these books. I spent 2 years looking for a copy, and apparently, you know, now online booksellers are getting on there. But it's a very rare book. So anyhow, that's what we're going to be giving away, and that's how you do it.
Well, glad to hear it. Sorry I don't get listened to as much as possible, but, you know, we Democrats have to work.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Rick, for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Frank in Los Angeles, California on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Frank. Don't listen to your radio. Just listen to the telephone here.
I've never heard so much nonsense in all my life.
Oh, that's great. What, for example?
Who do you think you are?
Hello? What kind of question is that, Frank?
Oh, go to hell.
Okay. Well, another articulate conservative. Isn't it wonderful how articulate these guys are? I really appreciate the call, Frank. It's in fact, I love hearing from conservatives. I love having discussions with them, and the more conservatives you call, the better. Although it's frankly rather saddening and disappointing that you didn't really have anything to say. Andy in Santa Fe's on the line. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. It's an honor. I have thoughts about language.
Uh-huh.
And you know how particular words are somehow given forth by whomever, and that by using the same terminology, the critiques that would be given out are undermined.
Sure.
And I would, you know, there's a few examples I could cite, like one would be the term miniaturization when it comes to nuclear weaponry, and how times that I've heard anti-nuclear activists speak, they will use the term miniaturization, and I think by adopting that same terminology, it helps to somehow flaw the critique, because what could possibly be less miniature than a nuclear explosion? And then even yesterday I heard you, even though you had in the same show criticized the use of the word homeland, you yourself used the word one sentence, recall.
Memes are contagious. You know,
that's
the bottom line. Memes are contagious.
Yes, sir, and it's difficult, and I think that people have to always be on guard about it. And the final one I have, there's another talk show that comes on this same station, and the theme of that is Take America Back. And I think that, and I've heard you just use that.
Sure.
And it seems to me that, you know, and none of us want to take America back. We'd like to bring America forward.
Yeah.
And like back to the homeland thing.
Yeah.
Whenever
well,
one would say anything about the homeland, you just say our country or the United States, you know?
Yeah, I confess, Andy, that A Guide to Taking America Back or something to that effect, I'd have to find the book, is the subtitle of my book, We the People.
Sorry, well.
But you know, a funny story about that. Here in Vermont, when, 4 years ago, I guess it was, when the Vermont Supreme Court ruled that our Constitution, which was actually written before the United States Constitution, because Vermont was an independent republic before it joined the United States, that our Constitution is not gender-specific when it comes to marriage, and therefore we had to allow either gay marriage or civil unions. And there was this big, you know, it took a year, and the legislature hammered this thing out, and there's a huge hue and cry, and a lot of people were very, very upset. And Howard Dean signed it into law, the civil unions law, which we've had now for 3 or 4 years, and frankly, I haven't noticed any change. I mean, suddenly people aren't getting divorced, you know, or whatever. But in any case, the backlash movement, the anti-gays, I guess you'd say, started this Take Back Vermont campaign. And they had all over the state, you'd see these signs. People were painted on the side of their barns. People had these signs out in front of their houses. And what was so funny was just about once a week, one of the local TV stations would interview somebody from out of state who'd come here on vacation. And they would say things to the effect of, you know, I really like this idea of Take Back Vermont. I bought some maple syrup. I'm going to take some Vermont back to Massachusetts. And see, they all thought it was part of a marketing campaign that was put together by the tourism board. Totally backfired.
Well, I guess that wasn't quite the take I had in mind, but yeah. It's very funny.
Yeah, there you go. Anyhow, okay. I got to move along. Andy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Preston in Colorado on the line. Hey, Preston, what's up in Denver there?
Hi, Tom. I must say I'm a little bit dismayed by a lot of the grief that Ralph Nader has been receiving. I mean, big business has been after that man for about 3 decades.
And he's done a great job of holding their feet to the fire and holding them accountable.
Absolutely. And to this day, I mean, while I'm going to be voting for Kerry, I still appreciate his presidential campaign because he's been getting out there, getting publicity, and reaching out to right-wingers. I've heard him on the Sean Hannity show. I've seen him interviewed by Pat Buchanan, and I'm happy to see that he's making an effort to reach that other camp that I think could never bring themselves to vote for a liberal, but they might vote for someone like Ralph.
Yeah, well, Preston, I can't quite agree with you because I think he'd do a better job if he was using a nonprofit to get the same message out like he did with auto safety. But, you know, I respect your point of view. We got to move along.
Okay.
20 minutes past the hour. Thanks for the call.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. In my new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, I examine how Thomas Jefferson's democratic vision for our nation has been under constant attack by conservatives who see political power as a tool to manipulate laws for their personal financial gain. Among the truths you'll learn by reading this book are how Jefferson warned that the merging of big business with state interests could be the greatest threat to democracy, Today we find that these fascist ideals have been prevalent in virtually all of George Bush's political and judicial appointments and legislation, the same as Hitler did when he overthrew the German democracy in 1933. You'll also learn how new scientific studies show that Jefferson was right when he cited in the Declaration of Independence that democracy was consistent with the laws of nature. Turns out that the natural state of all animals is democracy, and alpha animals only rarely act as leaders. What would Jefferson do? A Return to Democracy by me, Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Someone told me long ago. And welcome back. Yeah, the calm before the storm here. It's going to be the storm at the Republican National Convention. I'm frankly very concerned about that. I just really hope, that nothing bad happens there. Yeah, I'm not talking about terrorist attacks and things. I'm just very concerned that there's going to be a police riot like there was in Chicago in 68, and that it's going to reflect poorly on those who are opposed to Bush. I petition anybody who's going to be showing up in New York, please behave yourselves. We live in difficult times, and you know, conducting ourselves honorably is it's more important now than it's ever been. This is the same message. I remember listening to Gene Shepherd right after the big march where Martin Luther King spoke in the mall in Washington, D.C. And he spent a whole hour describing this thing, and it was absolutely incredible about all these people who came, and they were all wearing their Sunday best, and they were all wearing coats and ties, and how nice they were to him. He was a white guy. He was a radio talk show host in New York City. And just the sense of dignity and purpose and mission and pacifism and peace that was exemplified, and how incredibly powerful that was because of it. Let's hope. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jim in, is it Bernalillo, New Mexico, Jim?
Bernalillo.
Bernalillo. Okay, great. You're on the air. What's up?
We get you on KTRC here.
Oh, great.
I have a question for you. By the way, I just finished reading your book, What Would Jefferson Do? And that's outstanding.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And I've been thinking about this. I used to have a union job. I've since moved on working in white collar as an architect. And I've been looking at international trade, especially things like Airbus versus Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me because, of course, the European Union has heavily protected these guys at Airbus. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, because it seems to me that the governments in France, especially in Germany, are pretty well in bed with the guys at Airbus. And it seems to make it a success. And the people that I know, like I said, I'm an architect, and I know people that work for them that are aeronautical engineers, they seem to have a pretty good way of life. And what's the balancing act, if you will, between government affiliation with things like those national industries and what we're seeing with the Bush administration?
Yeah, Airbus actually started out as a government industry consortium.
Yeah.
And what were you seeing with the Bush administration right now, and this is one of the great tragedies of our day, is an administration that puts the interest of multinational corporations who owe no allegiance to any nation, much less the United States, over, for example, Halliburton incorporating in the Bahamas so that they can do business with Gaddafi in Libya and the mullahs in Iran when Dick Cheney was CEO of the corporation, and with Saddam Hussein, for that matter. In 99, right, reincorporating in the Caymans, and also so that they wouldn't have to pay tax on the profits that they made here in the United States. So you've got an administration that's putting the profits and benefits of multinational corporations over the interests of we, the people of the United States of America. And I think that that's an absolute crime. And then on top of that, because one of the interests of those corporations is maximizing profits, they're setting aside the needs of labor. They're saying, okay, it's not appropriate. If capital can organize in the form of trade associations and corporations, that's fine, but we're not going to let labor organize in the form of unions. And this union, this anti-union attitude began with Ronald Reagan pulling apart PATCO. When Reagan came into office, 25% of the American labor force was unionized. Now we're down to about 8% ever since Reagan declared his war on labor. And whatever the percentage that's unionized, you have about twice that many people in the economy who can actually, you know, put kids through school, have decent medical care, and retire. So now we've gone from 50% down to around 15%. And it's just right in keeping with the whole conservative worldview, the conservative agenda. It's very destructive. Good question there,
okay.
Jim. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 29 minutes past the hour.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
How do charter schools, promoted in the President's No Child Left Behind Act, stack up against public schools? Not so well. Data compiled by the American Federation of Teachers shows that fourth graders at charter schools lag 6 months behind students in public schools in reading and math. In addition, there are major discrepancies when it comes to race, with children of varying ethnic backgrounds performing worse in charter schools than their counterparts in urban public schools. In the past, charter schools had been championed as an alternative to poorly performing public schools. The No Child Left Behind Act mandates that public schools that chronically perform poorly are to be restructured as charter schools.
Recently, all charges were dropped against Francisco Herrera, a student intern with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee who was arrested in June for visiting farm workers in the fields. Herrera spent the summer visiting migrants in North Carolina to let them know about U.S. labor laws and protections like the right to earn a minimum wage and receive a pay stub.
They work about 12 hours, sometimes 14 hours a day, bending over,
picking cucumbers and doing like 100 buckets a day.
The workers at the farm where he was arrested were being paid $3 an hour.
And we told the workers that what's going to happen, like the grower would come and he's going to be furious. But you guys stand your ground and defend your rights. So the grower came irate. He started screaming at my coworker, just like, get off my private property, getting to see with this private property and all this stuff.
Arita said he will continue helping farm workers next summer with the Flock Student Action with Farm Workers program.
Contract negotiations are preventing work crews from Alabama Power from assisting in the Florida cleanup in the aftermath of Hurricane Charley. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have voted to give the power company 48 hours notice if a breakdown in negotiations lead to a strike. A representative of the company said it would be unfair to Floridians if they sent workers that may be affected by a work stoppage.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Feeling that you need to tighten your financial belt? According to the IRS, Americans reported less gross income on their tax returns for the second year in a row. This is the first back-to-back decline in more than a half century. Total income reported in 2002 fell by 2.3% to a little more than $6 trillion. And so far this year, wages aren't set to change the trend.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
If I could get out of this kidney dialysis, I'd be a free man, but alas, you'd think they'd be able to follow that cable right down through the middle of Krakistan Pass.
It's Osama. Yeah, we can't find a 6'6" guy riding a camel with a dialysis machine. It's just too much. I don't know. Did you notice that little story? It was a little page 4 story when we first went after Tora Bora that said that several airplanes had flown out of the Tora Bora area before we attacked, and nobody knew whose planes there were or where they were going. And I remember reading that and going, he just escaped. He just got out. And apparently I was right. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the air, Esther in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Esther, thanks for waiting over the break there. What's up?
I just wanted to add something to your contest about anything that the Bush administration has done to help anybody and or that benefited anybody. And I think the new legislation that Edward Kennedy drafted that relates to food labels for people with allergies.
Right.
As the mother of a child who has peanut and wheat allergies, I found myself astounded that he would have signed it, considering it might cost companies something to do this.
Yeah, I agree. And as somebody with celiac disease, I am concerned about food labels also. But I got to tell you, our contest is for legislation that originated with the Republicans.
Okay.
that they championed. I mean, just reluctantly signing a bill is not quite enough.
Well,
so good try, Esther.
That he signed it. Still astounded he signed it. So.
Good try, but
okay.
Yeah, keep on trying. I mean, keep your eyes open. Maybe you'll find something. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Bye now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I just want to wrap up this stuff about West Virginia before we move along. In West Virginia, because Bush was there yesterday, and I think it's important to just set the record straight. On Bush's first day in office, Berkeley County's unemployment rate was 3.6%. Today, it's 4.6%. West Virginia, real median and household income dropped by over $1,000 a year, from 30,713 in 2000 to 29,640 this year. That's a 3.5% drop. Well, people in that tax bracket did get about a $70 tax break, but they also saw their wages go down over $1,000. You figure out which is better. Wages dropped during 8 of the 11 months since August 2003, according to the U.S. payroll report released on July 16th. That from the Charleston Gazette, reporting on August 1st. And college tuitions are expected to rise 6% this fall, squeezing the middle class. The main reasons cited were the economy and rising energy costs. And it's going to cost more to heat your home, even if you live in the relatively comfortable climate of West Virginia. I say that, you know, broadcasting from the middle of the mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, where last winter we had three straight weeks where it never went above zero. Never went above zero. But anyhow, I know it gets cold in West Virginia, too. The Department of Energy expects natural gas home heating costs to increase 20% this coming winter, so that the average West Virginia cost will go up from $871 per household to $1,049 per household. About half of West Virginia households use natural gas to heat their homes. As do we here and in our Athenwood studio in the People's Republic. So, all sorts of strange things happening in the world. I think probably the strangest is that in about an hour, there is going to be this live public forum with Jon Snow, the multimillionaire who is now the head of the Treasury Department. The very, very wealthy guy now in charge of the Treasury Department, former president of the Business Roundtable, former CEO of one of the nation's largest railroads. Business Roundtable, of course, the group of the 100 CEOs of the 100 largest corporations in America, looking out for each other, shall we say. See, if labor did that, it would be called a union, and you'd have to, well, that's a whole other rant. Anyhow. So what are some of the questions that we should, ask? Well, first of all, we know that the Bush administration tax policy has shifted the tax burden onto the middle class. We might ask him why. Why is that? You know, why did two-thirds of the benefits in the tax cuts enacted in 2001 and 2003 go to households that earned more than $203,740? Two-thirds of the benefits. When Bush had said that, and I quote, most of the... where's the quote? I don't have it right in front of me. I'm sorry. But anyhow, Bush had come out and said that the majority of his tax cuts were going to the middle class. Just ain't so. What is the administration planning to do to assist the millions of workers who are scheduled to start losing overtime pay next week? That would be a good question. In light of staggering wages and stalled job growth, how can President George Bush claim the economy has turned the corner? Well, you know, actually, turned the corner was the buzz phrase of last week. And then John Kerry said, yeah, he's turned the corner right into the ditch. So they stopped using that. Now they're using the phrase, get the job done. I wonder what the job is that they're getting done. As our billionaires for Bush advertisements demonstrate, it's certainly... you know, helping out the billionaires. That may be the case. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to share your thoughts with me and with our listeners. Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I was watching CNN today, and something's just struck me as so obviously biased about their coverage of Kerry's campaign versus Bush that I just had to call and share it with you.
Okay.
Kerry was speaking to veterans at a, they were having a thing going on in Cincinnati, a conference. And while
the VFW
were showing Kerry's speech live, they had the screen split. And on the other side, they were showing all Bush's comments from his speech to the same group the day before.
Hmm. And the day before, when Bush was speaking, did they show Kerry clips?
Well, I just happened to catch a little piece of that, and no, they weren't showing anything about Kerry. The only thing they were doing is at the bottom where they run the lines underneath of the other news, they were hitting the bullets of the highlights of Bush's speech.
Yeah.
Of course, they weren't saying anything about the fact that Bush has cut benefits, health benefits and stuff for vets, that they cut the housing allowances for the family of soldiers that are over in Iraq, and some of this other stuff they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, and not to mention getting us into a war based on lies and then not having a plan to win the war and then sending soldiers over without appropriate body armor and contracting out things like mail and food to a large multinational corporation that reincorporated in the Bahamas so it doesn't have to pay taxes and that happens to be the former corporation of the vice president. I mean, they went after Bill Clinton for having invested $30,000 in a land deal in Arkansas 30 years ago that lost money and said, oh, he's a corrupt businessman, right? And oh, my. Oh, my. And so one side of the screen, were they running the audio of Kerry speaking?
Right. They were showing Kerry's speech live on the right side of the screen, but on the left they took the other whole half of the screen, not a little block, but just the whole half of the screen, and they had comments from Bush's speech as Kerry was speaking, showing what Bush said he was going to do to fix things for the vets.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they're trying to take what positive things Kerry was saying and delete what he was saying by showing that, well, Bush is going to do this and Bush is going to do that. Yeah. I mean, it looked like something from the Republican Party. How can they say they're fair and giving fair coverage to everybody when they're so biased? It just struck me as so obvious that I just was stunned.
Well, here's my conspiracy theory on that, Anne. And I may, this may sound over the top, and it might be. I'm perfectly willing to be proven wrong. In fact, I hope I'm wrong. But I remember when Howard Dean seemed to have the nation mesmerized. And, you know, he was on the cover of Time and Newsweek, and he was getting all this very favorable coverage, and he was being interviewed, and you know, blah, 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 blah. And Louise and I were watching him being interviewed by Chris Matthews on Hardball one night. And he said, and Chris said, what would you do about the giant media combines? And Dean says, well, I would appoint an FCC that would break them up. He said, I think, and I'm paraphrasing from memory here, he said, I think that they're a violation of the antitrust laws, and I also think that they're you know, not good for democracy. You know, large corporations owning so much of the media, I'd break them up. And Matthew says, oh, really? Would you break up this one, you know, General Electric, which owns MSNBC? You know, make them divest MSNBC and spin it off as a separate company. And Howard Dean said, yeah. Yeah, I would do that. And I turned to Louise and I said, that's the end of his favorable coverage in the national media. And she was like, oh, you're such a cynic. And I said, you watch. And literally from that day, Howard Dean did not again get a favorable mention in any of the national media, and it took him down. And last week, I believe it was last week, John Kerry spoke before the association, I forget the name of it exactly, but it essentially was an association of minority journalists, mostly African-American writers and reporters and whatnot. And in his speech, he said that he would appoint commissioners to the FCC who would begin enforcing the ownership rules and break up the big media monopolies. And I saw that, and I absolutely cringed, and I thought, okay, that's it. Kerry's free ride is over. They're going to start taking him apart. And ever since then, every time Kerry has spoken, every significant news story that reports on him has always had some little knife into it where they weren't before then. And, I mean, you know, you've got this multi-billion-dollar industry that's controlled basically by four corporations, arguably six corporations, control 90% of what we see, hear, and read. And Kerry just, you know, essentially declared war on them. How would we expect them to react? What do you think, Ann? You think I'm paranoid?
No, I'm not, because I agree. When I saw the same speech that Howard Dean had made, and that's the first thing I said was, "Uh-oh, he's history. They're gonna nail him big time." And they did. They went like a bunch of wolves on a lamb and just viciously attacked him. I didn't know Kerry had. I know he had met at that group, but I didn't know he'd said such a thing about them. And that kind of would explain some things. I mean, they've been doing some bias before this, not like Fox, because Fox is just outrageous, you know. Of course, according to Fox, well, it's all the Democrats' fault. The Democrats aren't playing fair in the ads and that kind of thing, as far as they're concerned. But I kind of expect that from them, knowing Murdoch. But CNN is the one that tells you they're the most trusted news station.
Yeah.
I think somebody should go after them to make them quit using that phrase. That's really what I think somebody should do.
Well, I think that they should be divested from AOL Time Warner. I think it's just wrong. You know, when Thomas Jefferson wanted to amend the Constitution to add a Bill of Rights, and one of the items in the Bill of Rights that he thought should be included was a ban on commercial monopolies, there was a reason. They had seen the British East India Company become, you know, the Walmart, the AOL Time Warner of the day, where it was just inhaling other industries. Nobody could compete against it. It was destroying competition. And there's a reason why they passed the Sherman Antitrust Act and the six or seven other laws that were passed right up through the 1950s that sought to strengthen it or focus it. And, you know, the Sherman Antitrust Act being passed in 1881. And there's a reason why Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing it. You know, Jimmy Carter was the last president to break up a monopoly, AT&T. And this has led to and Bill Clinton even encouraged, you know, this consolidation by signing the Telecommunications Act.
Yeah, I was against that bill too.
Oh, it's just it's,
you know, I'll trash out the Democrats when they deserve it, and Bill Clinton deserves 10 lashes for that one.
At least.
But I still think a lot of what they're doing, it maybe it has to do with what Kerry said the other day, but I also think a lot of what they're doing has to do with, if you go back to see who controls the companies, CNN, MSNBC, et cetera, that the corporations that control are doing it because they know the Republicans and Bush will give them more of what they want in exchange for that, what they're doing versus the Democrats.
Right, more
because
tax
they know
breaks.
The Democrats are not going to be so favored.
Yeah.
Claim such favoritism.
Yeah, they're going to get more corporate tax breaks. We have a situation where in the 1950s, 50% of the total income of the federal government was from corporate taxes. Now it's down to 15%. And Jon Snow, who's going to be on this thing tonight, he and his predecessor, Paul O'Neill, have suggested it should be zero. Should be 0%, that we should pay the cost of the commons, you and me, the workers, that we should pay the entire cost of the commons and let corporations have a free ride, even though they are using our air, our water, our roads, our communications infrastructure, our court system, our currency, you know, and on and on and on, that they should not have to pay their dues for membership in a civil society, that all of the dues should just simply be paid by us, and yet they you know, it's just, it's nuts. And thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good points you raised. Well said. What else is Jon Snow going to address in his forum this afternoon? Another good question to ask him if you happen to drop in on that forum. It's going to be, I believe it's going to be on the internet. You can get to it. How does the Bush administration justify the president's reliance on tax cuts to boost the economy in light of the fact that they were less effective and more expensive than other tactics? I mean, we have known for thousands of years, and this isn't anything new, that if you want to stimulate an economy, you pump money into the bottom. In other words, you give people who are mostly consumers more money, and the best way to do it, frankly, is to give them a job. And the way that you give them a job, if you want to jumpstart the economy, you do what has been done so many times by Republicans and Democrats over the years. I mean, FDR was probably the most famous for it with the WPA, but you say, okay, we're going to build some more roads. Well, you know, the Eisenhower highway system was a huge economic stimulus to the United States. We're going to build a national highway system. It's going to cost a fortune. It's going to be paid for with tax dollars. It's going to employ people. And then those people go out and buy things. They buy homes. They buy goods at the local stores. And that purchasing then drives demand for all those things. And then that makes jobs for more people. And that demands, and you know, whenever you start at the bottom and build it up, you grow an economy. You start at the top and you say, we're going to give money to people who sit around by the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive. All you're doing is guaranteeing that they're going to be looking for more tax shelters and more ways to hide their money that society can't get at it. It's not right. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When you look at a forest, do you see pretty flowers and cute little critters hopping around? Well, when we billionaires look at a forest, we see redwood decks, teak furniture, and reams of bleached white paper. We look at all the untapped natural resources available, and we see opportunity where others can't see the forest for the trees. Aren't you bored of tree huggers whining about the precious old growth forests? Don't they understand the law of supply and demand? The more trees we clear cut, the more scarce we make them, and the more valuable they become as a commodity. So the next time you hear the buzz of chainsaws, know the billionaires are giving Mother Nature more bang for her buck. I'm Zena Fope for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
To lie takes a liar, it's to steal takes a thief. To lie to the whole world takes a liar in chief. He lies and he lies and he lies. He lies and he lies and he lies. He must despise all the what fors and whys. The way he lies and he lies and he lies.
Yes, president in chief. Wouldn't be talking about a talk show host, at least not this one, I'm sure. So, must be talking about George Bush. just to clean up something, we had a caller at the bottom of the hour who was saying, you know, isn't it great that Ralph Nader is out there on Sean Hannity's radio program talking about how terrible George Bush is? There's a reason why partisan Republicans like Hannity are giving Ralph Nader a platform. And the reason has nothing to do with liking Nader's ideas and everything to do with hoping that, I mean, you know, there's a small percentage of listeners who might be independents who might be swayed to Nader, and the large percentage of that audience's listeners who are hardcore Republicans, of course, are just going to ignore whatever Nader says and go ahead and vote for Bush. And so, the goal is to get Bush elected. And don't be suckered in. Now, here we have George W., who is still looking for one person, one single individual, who actually remembers him showing up for service at the Alabama National Guard. Actually, several soldiers have come out and said that they were looking for him because they heard that, you know, the son of a congressman was being transferred in there. He's a big shot. He, you know, hey, somebody we can hang out with, a rich guy. A babe magnet, one guy said. Wouldn't it be cool, you know? Well, nobody has come forward. But with regard to John Kerry, there are people just coming out of the woodwork here. An Ohio factory worker who was with John Kerry on a dangerous night mission 36 years ago in Vietnam says he has no doubt that Kerry was grazed in a firefight and deserves his first Purple Heart for combat injury. Pat Runyon, 58-year-old grandfather from Eaton, a small southwestern Ohio town, says, we were on about a 14-foot boat with an outboard motor. We started out taking a guess around 10 p.m. We were supposed to sneak up and check sampans. Runyon, an enlisted man who served on swift boats in Vietnam, was not a regular member of Kerry's crew. He said in an interview Sunday, he said, let me tell you, I didn't volunteer. But anyhow, he says he was in this boat with Kerry, and they took machine gun fire, and to make a long story short, he was there. He says Kerry was heroic in how he behaved. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. Thanks to our sponsors for keeping us on the air, to Jay for our music, to the folks in our chat room, and the folks of the Democratic Forum on CompuServe for sponsoring it. Thanks to you in particular for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. I'll see you here then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior.